The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Wrong mic. Welcome to a Friday, everyone, and you can tell I really need a weekend. Oh, boy. You know, I don't even know where to begin. So, the Senate, well, let's back up. Yesterday, the Senate was going to vote on, they had a few outstanding pieces of business to deal with before they could leave to go on vacation because, you know, this weekend's Memorial Day and they need to take a week off. Of course, the House is already out for 3 weeks. Go figure. Anyway, so last night, there was one bill they had to get through in order to move on to the vote on the commission to investigate what happened on January 6th at the Capitol, right? And so things seemed to get off to a good start yesterday. The Senate moved past the first procedural vote on the U.S. Innovation and Competition Act. It's a huge package that you haven't heard much about, I guess because it's not very sexy, but it aimed at confronting the growing tech power of China. It's meant to take them down a few notches, I guess. All right. So anyway, they were on track to get their business done and leave town for the Memorial Day break, but Ron Johnson happened. Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, the man who, how the fuck did he get in the U.S. Senate? He chimed in. He objected because his amendment didn't make it into the final bill. So he derailed the plan and kept senators from going home. And they began, they were there for until like 3 o'clock in the morning when they realized they were not going to get it done last night. So they adjourned and came back today at 9 a.m. So they came in at 9 a.m. and finally, after delay, they finally got that done. Actually, they held a vote open for a long time while Chuck Schumer cut a deal with some of the Republicans to agree to delay the final vote and any further progress on this China plan till next month, basically to put it off so they could get to work on the pressing issue of the day, which was the establishment of a bipartisan, independent January 6th commission along the lines of the 9/11 commission to look into what happened the day the Capitol was attacked. And I think, was it Joe Biden who said the worst attack, on our Capitol, like since the Civil War? And so they finally got it done, and it was right around noon today that they finally voted. Now, we knew it was going to be tough, right? Joe Manchin, of course, oh, that wonderful bastion of democracy, Joe Manchin. He was asked yesterday, a reporter, caught up with him in the hallways of the Senate and asked him if, you know, they're going to filibuster the commission, would you then do away with the filibuster? Here's what he said. You'll hear the question too.
Would you be willing to break the filibuster in order to get this passed? The plan B is
I'm not ready to destroy our government.
Say that again.
This passed. The plan B
I'm
is
not ready
depleted.
To destroy our government.
I'm not ready to destroy our government. Well, Senator, but the Republicans are, and they've been doing it systematically, and you are aiding and abetting them. So there's where we are. So they took the vote and they held it open for a while. When I jumped in, what? Oh, not Civil War, A War of 1812. Thank you very much. I can always count on David to correct me when I screw something up. And I, do that a number of times during each show. Anyway, they take the vote. And I noticed that it stuck on the tally was 54 to 35. And it was there for a while. And then finally, the vote ended. And I'm like, what the hell? That's only 89 votes. 54 and 35. 89. That means 11 senators did not vote. And at first I'm thinking it's 11 Republicans who are just too chicken shit to show up and, you know, and take a stand on something this important. So finally, they call the vote because it's 54 to 35. Doesn't matter that 54 was the majority. It went down. It was killed. The first filibuster of the 117th Congress, thank you very much, Mitch McConnell and Republicans, filibustered the cloture vote to open debate on having a commission. So they wouldn't even start debate. It's one thing if you're going to vote against the final bill, but they filibustered the opening of debate on the idea of a independent bipartisan commission to examine what happened on January 6th. And so that's it. Done, over, filibustered. It's off the table. So then I wanted to see, well, who? There were 54 to 35. I figured, okay, so then maybe there's four Republicans who voted for this. It turns out there were six. Six Republicans voted in favor of this commission. Those six are the three that you'd expect: Lisa Murkowski, Mitt Romney, and Susan Collins. The other three, Bill Cassidy, Louisiana, that was a surprise. Rob Portman of Ohio, well, he's retiring, so that wasn't too much of a stretch. And Ben Sasse, who surprised me because I didn't expect it, because he seems to talk out of both sides of his mouth. But those six did the right thing. So then who were the two? Ah, there were 11 who didn't vote. Let me quickly get the list of those 11 up. I'm spread out all over the place. Let me find the list, because now this is going to make me angry that I don't have it written out as easily as I had that. Okay. Not voting. You ready for this one? Here are the Republicans who didn't vote. Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee, Roy Blunt of Missouri, Braun of Indiana, Richard Burr of North Carolina. Now that one is a shame, because he could have gone the other way. Richard Burr is retiring, and he, you know, as far as today's Republicans go, he seems to be one of the more reasonable ones, but he was too chicken shit to show up and vote. What the fuck? Keeping going, Inhofe of Oklahoma, right? Risch of Idaho, Rounds of South Dakota, Shelby of Alabama, who's also retiring, just doesn't give a shit, and Pat Toomey, who's also retiring and actually voted to impeach Donald Trump. So just think about it. If Richard Burr and Pat Toomey weren't so chicken shit and voted this way, that would have been eight Republicans. And that leaves two Democrats who didn't vote. One of them is Patty Murray of Washington State. Really? Patty Murray? You need to explain yourself, ma'am, because if not, you need to be voted out. What was more important than protecting our capital? Our capital, the place where you hold so sacred, where you do business, where you were attacked and you couldn't be bothered to show up to vote to get a commission going to investigate what happened? Patty Murray, Washington State. And then the last one who didn't show up, Kyrsten Sinema. You know, this is a woman who claims, she used to claim to be a progressive. Boy, did she sucker punch everybody in Arizona into voting for her. This woman needs to be relieved of her duty immediately. So it's bad enough that she won't do away with the filibuster. You know, she's there with Joe Manchin because she's such a hardline conservadem. I don't know. But she couldn't be bothered to show up for this? I do know somebody in Arizona who tried calling her office. In fact, he tried calling all three of her offices, and not one of them answered. He didn't even get voicemail. He just got that, like, the sound when a phone line isn't working. Maybe her phones were being overloaded because people are so angry. I hope that's the case. Anyway, that's what happened today. And now the Senate is gone. They're gone for a week. House is out for another week. And we are screwed. But that's not everybody's opinion. Here's the segue. So if you were listening to the show last Friday, you would know that I was waiting and waiting and waiting for our guest, who is a friendly acquaintance of mine. We're on an email list together. But let me tell you a little bit about Guy Saperstein. He is a retired civil rights attorney and one of the famous ones, like big cases. And Guy Saperstein got very wealthy, handing it to the man, winning money for his clients against big, bad, evildoers. I'm trying to, bring it down to common level. But he won a lot of these lawsuits, class action suits, and he did very well for himself. And he retired, and he now is a very active in progressive politics, big Bernie Sanders supporter. And because he's a big donor, because he's got the bucks, he has the ear of the candidates. Well, we're on this email list together. And while many of us on the list are kind of freaking out over the Republican games that are being played that aren't, fun, they're serious games, they're scary games where they're trying to derail our election system. Arizona is just the start of it. We're kind of freaked out that things could get really ugly in the midterm election, which is always bad for a newly elected new party that takes power. In the first midterm, they always lose seats in Congress. Well, we have no seats to spare in the Senate and maybe three in the House. It's that close. So between the Republican dirty tricks, trying to, overrule elections, overturn fair elections, and the partisan gerrymandering that's only going to be hopped up this year because Donald Trump's census that I believe he cheated at, that I believe he intentionally sabotaged, will take seats away. It's going to show that, there aren't that many Hispanic people in L.A., so that populated Democratic states will lose seats. And a lot of red states are picking up seats. It's just, there are a lot of reasons why it looks like the Democrats could lose control of the House and the Senate, possibly both, in November of 2022. Well, on this email list that I'm on, there's a lot of people who are kind of freaking out, saying, all right, something's got to be done. But Guy Saperstein has been very insistent that no. In fact, 2022 is going to be great for the Democrats. And 2024 is going to be even better. And he didn't just say it once. He has said this over and over again. So it got to the point where I said, all right, you have to come on the show so we can talk about this, right? And so we were going to do that last Friday. The gremlins got in the way. As you know, the gremlins invade my studio at least once a week. And so they got us Friday. So we reconvened a couple of days ago. We were able to hook up on Zoom, and we connected and we taped an interview. So with no further ado, this is what we were waiting for last week. Here's our dose of optimism for the day. All right, here we go. Joining me on the line now is Guy Saperstein. He is, he's known in the activist world, in the legal community. You spent many, many years as a civil rights attorney. In fact, one of the country's most successful civil rights attorney, if what I've read is true.
25 years.
Wow. So I looked for you. There's not a Wikipedia page for you. There's not a whole lot of stuff out there. So can you tell us, you represented some huge cases. You won a lot of big cases. In what areas? Where was your expertise?
Well, I think I knocked off the whole insurance industry, grocery markets, banks, anyway, police departments. You know, I took on the biggest defendants I could find and filed the biggest cases in American history. I have in my repertoire the biggest sex discrimination employment case in American history, the biggest race case in American history, the biggest disability case in American history, the biggest age case in American history. So, yeah, I hold all the records, even to today, 25 years after I've retired. Nobody has beaten my records.
You actually, you wrote a book about it. I don't think it's in print anymore. It's called Civil Warrior. Yeah. I noticed you can buy a copy of it used for about $6 if you're interested. And I'm sure you've got a few spare copies hanging around. And so these days you are involved in politics. You are a real progressive. You're one of us. And you put your money where your mouth is. You're one of the major Democratic big progressive donors. And I make the distinction, as my listeners know, between a typical Democratic supporter and a progressive supporter. You're the real deal.
Well, I'm a Bernie Sanders guy, right down the line.
Yes, as am I. And we've talked about that. And you've also, you know, you've been critical of some of the establishment, Democratic centrist characters, and pushed for more progressive candidates. You're a Bernie supporter. You met with him a number of times during the campaign.
Many times, and I introduced him. The last time it was out here in San Francisco.
So I
love Bernie.
Right. And obviously you, like the rest of us, were disappointed when the way things played out again. But you keep involved and you do let your views be known to the people in power because you have access, because frankly, money is access.
You know, I was very disappointed when Bernie, I really think Bernie blew it, but I think it was his own fault that he lost. But I'm very disappointed, but I'm very impressed with the path Biden has taken. So I'm pleasantly surprised.
I've said that, too. I've never been happier to have been so wrong. and I hope it continues. I mean, there are things.
It will continue. It's going to get better. It's getting better.
Well, and that's what I wanted to talk to you about. So, Guy Saperstein, we were on an email list together. In fact, it's your email list. And it's filled with a lot of progressives from both activist groups, from media, from all walks of life. But the key thing that brings us together is that we are all progressive. And there's a thread that you started in this mailing list about a week ago. The subject was simply 2022. And you wrote, and the date was May 13th. I have it right here. You wrote, "I'm changing my prediction for 2022. I had predicted the Democrats would win 250 to 300 House seats. I'm changing that to 300 with 350 possible. In any case," you wrote, "it will be the biggest political destruction in American history. Thank Donald Trump, the biggest Democratic benefactor in American history. It will take conservatives 50 plus years to recover. Enjoy." And since that time, you've doubled down on that. You keep coming back and saying you think that not only, 2024, but 2022 is going to be a blowout.
Well, you know, Katrina Vandehevel, editor of The Nation, who's on the list, just sent me her column for tomorrow, which unlike Katrina, adopted the conventional wisdom that in off elections, the ruling party didn't do very well. And so I just responded to her a few minutes ago, telling her, "Katrina, you can take the smart money in 2022 and throw it in a trash can, because this is going to be the biggest destruction of a political party in American history. Nothing is even close. Even FDR's pluralities in 1932 and 36 will be exceeded. Even Johnson's pluralities in 1968 are going to be obliterated."
And do you feel this way because you see coming down the pike prosecution of Donald Trump and his minions, or the implosion?
I see that coming, yeah, but I haven't even factored that in.
Really?
The Democrats have so many advantages over the Republicans right now. It's just hard to calculate them, but they're huge. I mean, for example, right now the Republicans are mired in a losing argument about 2020. They can't get away from making this absurd argument that Trump never lost the election. They're completely devoid of any agenda. They have nothing to offer the American people. They're offering chaos and insurrection. They're led by lunatics like Marjorie Greene, Matt Gaetz, and Kevin McCarthy. Mm-hmm. They're experiencing the biggest loss of party registration in party history. They're now running 9 points behind Democrats, 49 to 40, and it's going to get worse. They're divided by the biggest divisions I've ever seen in a political party. They're just a total mess. And as if this weren't enough, they've lost corporate support.
Right.
Trump is the greatest gift the Democrats have ever received. He's wrecked the Republican Party, and it's going to stay wrecked for 50 years.
I love it. And as someone responded to you on the list, from your mouth to God's ears, I mean, that's what I would wish for. And common sense says that's what should happen. But we have seen common sense turned on its head over the last 5 years or so. I mean, who would have ever thought Donald Trump, that the Republican Party would even let him win the nomination,
Wait a second. I predicted in 2014 that Donald Trump would beat Hillary Clinton.
Wow.
I wrote 3 articles. It's all out there. And I explained the reasons. And I got everything right. It was not hard to see. It was not hard to see why Hillary was such a reprehensible candidate. That was very obvious. You know, Hillary did terrible. She did great in the Democratic primaries, but she was terrible even in 2008, all the way to 2016 in one-on-one matchups against Republicans. She was very, very weak candidate, and everybody could have seen that if they wanted to look. And the politics today are just as obvious. They're more obvious today. My predictions today are much easier to make.
Okay, so Guy Saperstein is with us. So now you have no concerns over the dirty tricks that the Republicans are playing when it comes to,
be overwhelmed. They can't do anything to stop this.
Wow.
All the voter suppression, which, by the way, not all this voter suppression efforts are going to be successful, but even if they were, this is going to be just a massive wave that's going to wipe all that shit away. And then it's going to be gone forever, because Democrats are going to be able to rule, and they're going to be able to get their full agenda. They're going to be able to get 100% of what they want for the next 50 years. This is going to be a new era. We've never lived through anything like this.
So,
and we can take Donald Trump.
So are you confident that if, Manchin and Sinema are successful and keep the Democrats from blowing...
Irrelevant. Irrelevant. They're going to be totally irrelevant by 2022.
Wow.
Totally irrelevant. Forget.
I love your optimism.
They should be irrelevant now.
Yes,
they should see the sign on the wall coming and moderate their opinion. But maybe they're not smart enough for that. But they're going to be gone by 2022.
So the Democrats, who are so good at snatching defeat from the jaws of victory, you're thinking that this is even Democrat proof, that there's no way they can blow it?
Well, the Democrats have blown a lot of battles. No question about that. You got that one dead on. But they can't do it this time. And you know what? They're not doing it this time. You've got to give the Democrats a little credit. They're doing a fucking good job right now. They're systematically giving the public what it wants. I mean, look, they passed the COVID relief bill. They've got the infrastructure bill. They've got the green policies they're pushing, police reform. They're pushing gun reform. All these policies are tremendously popular among the
people,
American voters, and Republicans just blindly oppose them all.
Everything. It doesn't matter what it is. Right.
As if this weren't enough for the Democrats, they're going to have the wind at their back, because by 2022, the economy is going to be booming. I mean, GDP is going to be up 4 to 6%. Unemployment's going to be down. Voters are going to be optimistic. And when the economy is good, the ruling party wins.
Then then let me ask you this question. Why are you moving out of the country?
Well, I'm moving out of the country for other reasons. I mean, I think America has structural problems that are not going to be solved. I mean, number one, you've got electoral college, which means it's not a democracy, really. You've got two senators per state. Well, of course, you can increase states, but you still got that disadvantage. You've got tremendous racial and economic disadvantages. It's just you've got a tremendous amount of violence. I'm moving to France, and France, get this, violence in France is 19 times less than America. It's safe to walk the streets at night.
Wow.
in Paris, whereas you can't do that in a major city in America.
America.
So, yeah, I have lots of reasons to move to France. I'm still, going to have my toe back into American politics, and I'm still actually giving money to American politics, and will continue to do that. But I feel like I've been fighting this battle for 50 years. I have a right to have a little bit of tranquility in my final 20 or 30 years.
Without a doubt. So when do you plan on going?
Well, I'm actually going to visit. I'm taking my whole family, 10 people.
Wow.
We're all moving together.
Grandchildren and everything, right?
Everything, yeah.
Wow.
We're visiting in June, and we're going to move permanently in August.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. And I was going to ask, do you not worry about, it's known France is, there's a big anti-Semitic population there, but I guess we have it here now too. So it's everywhere.
Well, to be honest with you, even though I carry the name Saperstein, I'm actually not Jewish.
Oh, you're not?
But, no, I'm not. But my dad was Jewish, but he's a non-practicing Jew. And my mother was a very devout Catholic. I was actually baptized Catholic.
Oh, interesting.
But I grew up as a Christian and consider myself a Christian, but to the extent that I have any religion. But, I've never actually suffered anti-Semitism. Maybe I've just been lucky. Mm-hmm. But, there's anti-Semitism
everywhere.
There's a lot less of it in France. It tends to be, a little bit more targeted. Even the violence in France is more targeted. Here, violence can hit anybody randomly. Anybody
sure.
Goes to a supermarket or goes to a rock concert or goes to a parking
That's
lot.
That's right.
You just don't know when it's going to hit. So there's been some terrible violence in France, but, it's targeted to specific people. So the average person doesn't have to worry too much.
I hear you. So let me ask you, looking towards the future, because you do have your finger on the pulse of the progressive movement, who do you see down the line as the coming progressive stars who can, ascend to perhaps the presidency? I mean, it seems like the Democrats don't nurture the bench. You just look at House leadership and the fact that they're all, in their 80s, and they haven't brought up the next generation. And the ones that they have are, frankly, not on our side of the aisle, to be honest.
Well, you are exactly right. Listen, one person who's not a leader of the future is Kamala Harris.
Uh-huh.
Kamala Harris, who I know very well from out here in California, mm-hmm. and I've supported in the past out of necessity. But look, she ran the most disastrous presidential campaign I've seen in recent history. She started polling 18%, and after about six debates, she was down to 6%, and she had to get out of the race. Now, Biden picked her for logistic reasons, mm-hmm. and maybe that was the right choice. But she's a disastrous candidate for the Democrats. She's going to get, if she ran, despite everything I've said, she's going to be blown out of the water.
Oh, no.
She's a terrible, weak candidate. And she's a terrible candidate, aside from the logistics. The candidate that I like most of all right now is Stacey Abrams.
Hmm.
She's, a fairly reliably progressive. She's, very attractive. She speaks very well. She's, I think, very, very attractive candidate. There are going to be others. I mean, I like Gavin Newsom. I support Gavin Newsom. I like him a lot. I don't know if a white male from California is the right candidate this time in American history. I would probably support him even against Stacey, but not just because, you know, my past association with him.
Sure.
But there are going to be other candidates. I mean, the Democrats should be, you know, what they need to do, they need to not repeat the mistake of 2016, where they tried to clear the field of stronger candidates and allow Hillary to run. They can't make that mistake for Kamala. That would be disastrous. That's the only thing that can trip them up, I think, would be to do that. They've got to open it up and let it be a fair contest.
But do you think that'll happen? I mean, historically, you have a sitting president who, for whatever reason, doesn't run for a second term. And I can't imagine Joe Biden is going to run again. I'm sorry. He's just frankly
too... I thought he was a little bit too demented and he wouldn't run again. But, you know, he's been looking a lot stronger.
Yeah.
And I think the Democrats, they better run him again because they can't run Harris. They can't run Harris under any circumstance.
That's what frightens me. And the fact is they do. I mean, Jim Clyburn, I fault for Bernie, you know, for sabotaging Bernie. And he said, and look, the other day he even said on the George Floyd police reformation bill, if we don't get qualified immunity now, we'll get it later. We can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. It's all about qualified immunity. You know, the priorities are screwed up.
Look at Bernie sabotaged himself. I talked to him one-on-one 3 times. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I told Bernie, I said, Bernie, number one, you are not a socialist.
Right.
I said, I'm a socialist, but you're not. Okay. Number two, this is not a revolution. You're not calling for a revolution. These are not revolutionary times. Would you get rid of that shit?
Yeah.
You are an FDR Democrat.
Yeah.
Talk about being an FDR Democrat. That's very, very popular. And he refused to do it. He was stubborn.
Wow.
And that's why he lost the presidency. It's his own fucking fault.
Yeah. You know, it's semantics. It's just like the whole defund the police movement. I'm sorry. It's just really bad positioning. But Democrats are great at that. They are the worst at marketing. They are the worst at coming up with a bumper sticker slogan. They just totally. So we need some more creative people. You know, as much as I despise the Lincoln Project people because I don't trust them, we need that kind of creativity.
I actually gave money to the Lincoln Project, and that's the first time I ever did that to Republicans.
So again, just to revisit, 2022, you believe the Democrats are going to walk away with at least 300 seats in the House. So there's no worry about the Republicans taking back the House or the Senate?
Look, I'm going to Vegas. Right now, I've got my secretary in Vegas trying to place $1 million bet that the Republican Party will not even exist as a competitive political party in 2024. That's how confident I am.
I love it. Because you've been saying this, that's why I wanted to have you on the show, because we could use this injection of optimism. Now, this is not to let anybody be cocky or overly confident. We still have to vote in massive numbers in 2022.
The Democrats have lost so many winnable fights that I don't think we have to worry too much about cockiness and complacency this time.
Well, but you know what? They were so sure that Hillary Clinton was going to win. I just started reading the Edward Isaac DeVore book about the 2020 campaign. I'm interviewing him on Thursday, and it opens with the scene as Obama is sitting watching the returns, and his person keeps calling him with updates, and they were convinced, Hillary's going to win. The Clinton campaign had no plan of how to move if she lost, because they never even considered the possibility.
There were so many obvious reasons why she was going to lose that they didn't see. They're just a bunch of fucking idiots. These people don't deserve a dime from American donors.
Right. But we still have to work. I mean, you're not saying be complacent and sit back, because nothing is easy.
I'm not saying don't work. I mean, work as hard as you can, but it's going to be a lay down.
Okay. Well, I don't know when Election Day 2022 is. I think 2024 is on the 5th. 2022, I'm not sure, but I'm going to put it in my calendar that the next day to reach out to you to get you back on the air to talk about what happened.
I'll give you my Zoom link in Paris. I'll be in Paris.
It sounds good. Maybe we can come visit if things get better. Hey, yeah. It's a party at Guy's house in Paris.
Well, come and visit.
Absolutely. I look forward to being able to do that. Guy Saberstein, thank you so much. I will take your optimism and keep it in the back of my head as I continue to be paranoid and worried that they're going to, you know, destroy what's left of this country. But
well, you can take it to the bank.
I hope you're right. Yeah. I'm an atheist Jew, but I will say also from your mouth to God's ears, please make it so.
Nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you too. There you have it, Guy Saperstein. So that's the guy I've been telling you about, that this guy, big Democratic donor, is convinced that you heard him. I think he was serious. When you start talking about making million-dollar bets, I sort of tune out because, it's not my world. But he wants to make a $1 million bet that by 2024, the Republican Party won't even exist anymore? All right, that's interesting. Well, since I'm not one to just let one person give their opinion and let it go at that, we need to get the other side of the story. So this morning, I called on I called on David Ferris. Now, David Ferris is an associate professor of political science at Roosevelt University. He's the author of the book, It's Time to Fight Dirty, How Democrats Can Build a Lasting Majority in American Politics, Please. And it looks like he's got a new book out called The Kids Are All Left. David Ferris, first of all, welcome back to the show, and thank you for joining us on such short notice.
It's great to be here, and thanks for inviting me back on the show.
Sure. I'm going to ask you about The Kids Are All Left, because it, based on the title, I think I agree with you, and I'm excited because I think they're the hope for the future. Not today's Democratic Party, because frankly, Guy Saperstein may be very optimistic. I'm not so optimistic, and from what I understand, neither are you. I saw you quoted in an article at Vox.com, basically, and I'm paraphrasing here, but saying something to the effect of, if the Democratic Party doesn't get its shit together and do something about the dirty tricks that the Republicans are playing with our election systems in this country, then we're screwed. Did I kind of get the gist of it right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a very sort of unapologetic and open plot unfolding on the right today. And it's not just the standard issue voter ID laws and that kind of, you know, stop Democrats from voting stuff. It's much more insidious and sinister, right? Because on his way out the door, Donald Trump, who weaponized this sort of waning commitment to democracy that the Republicans have. And he convinced basically, like 2/3 or 3/4 of rank and file Republicans that the election was stolen.
Right.
And that, you know, conveniently, only Democrats in these five places decided to steal the election. But it's, you know, it's preposterous, but it has taken root on the right.
Right. And it's just like in Arizona and Georgia and wherever, the down ballot races were all right. It was just the presidential race that was screwed up.
Yeah, I was like, right? I mean, before Georgia, I was like, oh, what, did we forget to steal the Senate?
Right.
Right. But while that was happening, in the aftermath of the election, and they were telegraphing this before the election too, it became clear that part of the plan to steal the election was to convince Republican legislatures in places like Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan to send alternate slates of electors to the counting on January 6th. And they couldn't get them to do it. There just weren't enough crazy people in the right places. Also, those three states had Democratic governors and Democratic secretaries of state.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were too many institutional obstacles to pulling it off. But the literal text of this thing called the Electoral Count Act of 1887, what a country, right? it makes it clear that they could do it, right? Like all they have to do is get a majority in both houses of Congress to toss out the contested electoral votes, and they can make whoever they want president. You know, now it wouldn't be smooth, right? It would end up in court. It might end up in front of the Supreme Court. We have no idea actually how this statute would play out in the courts.
Right.
But that's the play.
Look at the makeup of the Supreme Court right now. It's top heavy, you know, crazy Donald Trump appointees. I mean, you already had Thomas and Alito, you know, there. And now you got Gorsuch and Kavanaugh and Amy Coney Barrett. sorry, that my voice just goes there because she's the Stepford. That's how she talks. Amy Coney Barrett. I can't help it when I say her name. Just,
brilliant legal minds, Nicole. Brilliant legal minds. So, you know, Beer Kavanaugh and all these guys, you know, it could be Trump on the ballot too, right? Be about Trump. And it's like a Supreme Court that Trump appointed 1/3 of it might decide the ultimate fate of our democracy. Or, you know, if this goes the way it could, the military could come into play here. And I really am not an alarmist, right? And I was skeptical about all this stuff throughout the fall until the party really went forward with it when they objected to the votes, which told me they're serious about it. There's 2020 truthers running for Secretary of State positions all over the country. We're heading into a midterm election that's both really critical, but that, you know, the odds are not great in terms of Democrats holding on to one or both chambers of Congress. With all due respect to your previous guest, I would not take that to the bank.
Right. No, nor would I spend, you know, bet $1 million on. I wouldn't bet 10. But, you know, even without the shenanigans they're doing, trying to get their people. Look, in Arizona, the Secretary of State, Katie Hobbs, they stripped her of her power to deal with the elections, and they gave it to the Republican Attorney General. That's what she was elected to do when they took her power away. They're trying to do this in state after state after state. And if there were, and so, you know, even before that, the Democrats were poised to be hurt in the midterms, because historically that's what happens. The party that takes power in a general election loses seats in the first midterm election. It just is the way it works. And again, with all these other issues on top of it, it's a scary place to be right now.
Yeah, it's a scary place to be. And it's, you know, I think the sort of like Twitter activist types are pretty keyed into this threat, and they're like apoplectic about it. And, but if you pull just a sort of like random Democratic voter off the street who's not that engaged in politics, but shows up for the primaries and shows up for the election, they think everything's fine. You know, they're like, well, Biden won, you know,
he's doing a good job. I feel less stressed.
Right. I can sleep at night. Right. I don't have to think about the president all the time, which is a relief for the people that can do that.
It's
God bless
really
them.
Nice.
And, and so I think there's just a natural complacency that sets in. It's not like there's nothing wrong with these people, right? But there's a complacency that sets in when your party's in power and you think it's forever because, like, you know, how could it change? Like, we won last time, we'll win next time.
Right.
And I think people don't understand is, like, this is the high point of Biden's term, right? Like, he's never going to get more popular than this. And in all likelihood, he'll be less popular.
Right.
And so I think there's a lot of headwinds blowing at us. In terms of the midterm elections, not just for the House and Senate, but also for governorships. You know, 16 of the last 19 midterm elections, the president's party has lost governorships. And I can't emphasize enough how disastrous it would be to lose, you know, more than one or two of those critical state governorships next year.
And the fact, you know, the fact is, during the 8 Obama years, the Democrats lost so much. They lost state governments. They lost congressional seats. He should have been building up the bench, and he didn't. You know, Obama's a topic for another day. I understand people love him because they remember the years when, you know, it was the cool guy's president. It was the guy who could speak contemporaneously, who wasn't a moron standing up there. He had a brain, and he seemed like a nice guy. But you know what? He wasn't a great Democrat. He wasn't a great president. He kept us, you know, scandal free, which I guess there's something to be said for that. But he left us in really bad shape as a party. He left us, you know, I hate to say it, with the cupboards bare. The military cupboards weren't bare, but the Democrats' organization was, and I fault him for that. So we need to rebuild as we're fighting against this insanity. And it really is. The Trump world is bizarre. It's nuts. There's no common sense there. The fact that it's more than 50%. I think it was 2/3 or 3/4 of Republicans believe that Joe Biden won. I mean, that Donald Trump won the election, that Joe Biden is not really the president. It's insane. I talk about opposite world all the time. I started talking about it during the George Bush years. This is opposite world.
Everything you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
So nothing makes sense. And that's where we are. And it's only gotten worse. And now they're, you know, the gaslighting on top of it all is making us all feel like we're crazy. We're not crazy. They are.
Oh, we won the election, right?
We won the election. Yes.
But it is really scary that Trump has like cast this spell over tens of millions of people. And get them to believe something that has absolutely no evidence whatsoever for it. You know, some Republican secretaries of state have certified these votes. It's just a crazy theory. But the fact that he is
instilling fear in these people, like he is gonna what caused them to lose their jobs? I'm sorry. Jobs in Congress were never supposed to be lifetime appointments anyway. And the fact that all these people are putting their job, the position that they're in, above the nation, above the Constitution, is really sickening. And it's sad that the average rank and file Republican out here in America doesn't see that. But, you know, the Brad Rappensperger, the Georgia Secretary of State, who did the right thing as Donald Trump was trying to overturn those results, now is coming out and saying, well, you know, he's going along with the changes they want to make. And he's basically now siding with Trump. It makes no sense. What the hell is going on?
I mean, Trump took over the party, yeah. You know, and I think that there was some expectation that when he was defeated and impeached for a second time, maybe other figures would step up to fight back against him. But I think it's a combination of otherwise sane people who are afraid of Trump and afraid of getting primaried. And then there's increasing numbers of true believers in Congress, you know, people that actually believe this stuff, you know, like, yeah. Tommy Tuberville.
Oh, well, he's nuts.
He's the dumbest person in Congress. Yeah. By considerable margin.
Yeah. He said something the other day, like, you know, I can't even remember what it was, but it was so asinine, something like, well, I'll get on board with killing the filibuster when there's a majority of people, you know, it's just like, it was a non sequitur. It's like, no, when the majority votes in favor of it, like what? He doesn't know how anything works.
He's like one of many people in Congress who I think about. I've never actually read the Constitution and they don't actually understand the political order. Well, that they
Donald Trump in. Too. I mean, that's the problem. It comes from the top down. There's your trickle down. Trickle down idiocy has invaded the Republican Party. I know people who have been Republicans through the years, and I know they're not stupid people. And some of them are still Republicans, and I don't get it. The good thing is, the encouraging part is, the size of the Republican Party is shrinking. Now, a majority of them may still believe Donald Trump is the second coming, and they literally do, I guess. But the number of the universe is shrinking. So maybe that's working in our favor, I hope.
Yeah, I mean, there are reasons to be optimistic in the long term, right? And that's what my new book is about. The Kids Are All Left, which is this like unprecedented now 18-year cycle of voters under 30, like voting very, very heavily Democratic, and many of those voters are now in their 40s. And if Republicans don't start winning those incoming 18-year-olds, they're really in trouble because their voters are dying off and they're being replaced by much more liberal cohorts. Okay, but we're not there yet, right? Like the generational churn between elections is fairly small. Like, you know, in 4, 8, 12, 16 years, it'll be huge, but we got to get over this hump in the next, 4 to 6 years. And that's what really scares me here. Because I actually think that I think that Republican leadership understands that. They understand that their policies and their attitude and their cultural comportment has like no appeal to people under the age of 45.
Yeah.
And they see this big problem coming. And so they don't want to fight on a level ground with us anymore. Not that we have been for 20 years, right? But they don't even want to fight like an unfair fight with us, that like they want to make sure that Democrats don't win another election. And if they get away with this, if we sleepwalk into 2022 like we sleepwalked into 2010, we lose these governorships, we lose these Secretary of State races, we lose both chambers of Congress, and then the election in 2024 is close, they're going to do it. You know, the state legislature, the governors and are going to sign alternate slates of electors, and they're going to send them to D.C. And if Republicans have majorities in both chambers of Congress, they can certify whatever they want. And we can sue them, but just bring it full circle. You know, that means Amy Coney Barrett's going to decide the future of democracy.
Oh, please.
And so this is why it's so critical that Democrats in Congress act. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You got to mandate nonpartisan redistricting to give us a better chance of keeping the House. You got to pass the D.C. statehood bill out of the Senate and swear in those senators on the spot before the court challenges come in. And just all sorts of, like, we had to rewrite the Electoral Count Act because we have a majority, right? You get one of these, you get the trifecta like once a decade.
Right.
And if we don't use it, if we don't take these threats seriously. Now, I think, you know, 80% of Democrats in Congress get it and they want to do this stuff. And maybe 40% want to do some more radical stuff. But you got these 2-3 knuckleheads in the Senate who are holding everything up. I don't know what Kyrsten Sinema is doing today, but she didn't vote.
She did not vote. She didn't show up. Now, Patty Murray also wasn't there, and it upset me. She did issue a statement. The statement, I don't know, bothers me. This is the statement. Quote, "I had to fly home this morning for a personal family matter. The need for an independent investigation and trusted record of the facts surrounding the January 6th insurrection could not be more important to our democracy or to me personally. I again urge every one of my colleagues to vote in favor. And if Senate Republicans vote to block the January 6th commission this time, they can be sure I'll be ready to bring it back up and keep fighting to get it done." But she couldn't be there today when we can't afford to lose one vote? I'm sorry.
It's something serious. I mean, I hope it, you know.
I hope it's nothing serious too, but I'll tell you something. Unless someone in her family is dying, she had no excuse not to be there. Kyrsten Sinema is just frankly a piece of shit who needs to be voted out of office because she's a Republican. She does not belong in the Democratic caucus in the U.S. Senate.
She has really, really rapidly become my least favorite Democrat, like in all of Congress.
Right. And that's a pretty hefty lift because you got Joe Manchin there, too.
Saying something. I mean, Manchin at least has a reason, right? He's like, I'm in a Trump plus 32 state. I got to do what I got to do. And we can't get rid of him because he's like literally the only Democrat in West Virginia that could win there.
Right.
But Sinema, there's no reason for this, right?
No,
like,
we could find
somebody much more useful than Kyrsten Sinema who could win in Arizona. And play ball and vote to eliminate the filibuster, right? And that's the gateway drug to all of this, because these two, like, we won the vote today, right? Yeah. We won it 54 to 35.
Yeah, that's, we should be celebrating today.
Only in America, right?
Right. You get a majority. The news
stories are like the vote failed 54 to 35, and I'm like, this is so indicative of the problem.
Right. And while it's like, I'm sorry, I'm not a big Hillary Clinton fan, and I agree she was the worst candidate we've had, and I'm now reading Edward Isaac DeVere's book, and it just brings it all back, and it's like blood pressure on the rise. But the fact remains, she won the popular vote by more than 3 million votes. We never should have had Donald Trump anywhere near the White House. And when Obama was president, and we did control, Democrats did control all the, why they never even talked about getting rid of the Electoral College. It makes no sense. And the thing is, if I understand history correctly, the thing that it was set up to do is to protect us from a Donald Trump, right? I mean, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, sort of. I mean, the thing it was set up to do was to allow like a handful of white dudes to pick the president. No matter what the people want. So the founders would actually be like completely horrified by how the Electoral College works now, because it's more of a, like an automatic mechanism that that kicks in to award the state's electors to the winner of the popular vote in most states. But it's an idiotic institution. I mean, so is the Senate. So is the filibuster. Yep. All these things in comparative perspective, nobody else on earth does stuff like this, right? There's only one other legislature, a Democratic legislature in the world, that has a supermajority requirement to pass anything. And it's South Korea. And it's probably going to change soon. And then it's just us off on an island here, losing votes that we won, losing elections that we won, right? Like, we have to take action to make sure that we win elections when we get the most votes.
Yes, yes.
And of course, Republicans could win outright. They could just win without cheating in 2022 and 2024. That's also possible.
They could. Right?
But they're going to cheat anyway. So
exactly, because that's what they do. And they accuse Democrats of doing it so easily because it's projection. That's what they do. Right. And one more thing about Joe Manchin. Last night, somebody asked him about, you know, if the Republicans filibuster the commission, would that get you to say, OK, enough with the filibuster? He said, I'm not willing to destroy the government. That is destroying the government. They're destroying the government. And he's aiding and abetting that.
Yeah. I mean, it's like if Joe Manchin was the president, and you remember Armageddon, a movie from the 90s?
Yes.
He'd be like, you know, it's, we got to have 60 votes in the Senate before we can send Bruce Willis to blow up the asteroid. Sorry, we're all going to die.
Right.
It's just like, it just seems like he's just going to sit back and watch like American democracy get wiped off the face of the earth, because he's committed to this demented principle of 60 votes that was invented, you know, like the idea that you have to have 60 votes for anything. It was not like that even into the 2000s. You know, this was like, Mitch McConnell did this to us. He has conducted the most successful propaganda campaign in history, convincing so many Americans and so many Democrats in Congress that the filibuster, the 60 vote threshold, is important to the functioning of the institution, when in fact it prevents the institution from functioning
from
at
functioning.
All.
I think
that's a bunch of bipartisanship, right?
That's right.
It puts so much pressure on each caucus to stay together. When if you got rid of the thing, then Collins and Manchin and Sinema could go write all the legislation they want. I wouldn't like it, but it would be better than nothing, right?
Right, right.
And so it's really frustrating and maddening. And it's like, people are like, what can we do? And I don't know what to tell them, because I'm like, do you live in Arizona or West Virginia? If not, then there's nothing you can really do about getting things through Congress, right?
Right, right. But then again, I live in Florida. And, you know, I was born in New York. My family moved down here in 71. In fact, next month, it's the 50th anniversary of 1971. And there's a great series on Apple Plus right now. It's an 8-episode series of this 1971, the music, everything changed that year. And I remember it so clearly because it's the year we moved down from New York to Florida. I went back to New York, went out to California, came back here. And this state was, at least in Broward County, where I live, has always been very blue, very Democratic. It's been overrun by Trumpers. You know, the Trump family is now invading, and they're bringing all of their crazy cronies with them. So Florida is not a safe place anymore. It's scary what's happening here. And I don't know what the answer is, other than everybody needs to vote. But even that might not save us, because they're fucking with the election systems.
Yeah, it's a circular pattern of, like, I call it proto-authoritarianism, and in political science, we call it competitive authoritarianism, right? It's a country where you have the veneer of elections. The people believe that they can change the leadership, but they actually can't, right? Because there's all these other factors preventing you from having a real democracy. Like Wisconsin, like, give just one example. Like, Wisconsin is not a democracy right now.
Right? And it used to be so progressive. It was the heartland of progressive, right?
I know. That's where progressivism emerged, right?
Yes.
But it's not, right? They have it gerrymandered to within an inch of its life, so that the Democrats win 53-54% of the state legislative vote, and they get 36% of the seats. You got the Supreme Court in Republican hands. You had the Republican legislature that is, you know, it represents a minority of the population in Wisconsin, stripped the incoming governor of some of his powers. And so it's like, where is the input here that you can get rid of these people?
Yeah.
And my fear is, and what I've been trying to sound the alarm about, is that they are trying to turn America into Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Okay? That's the plan here.
Wow.
The plan is to prevent us from being able to legitimately change the government, while still having us believe that we live in a democracy. And I'm heartened that so many more Democrats get it than they did 4 years ago, but we're not quite there. And that means that we're going to have to stay mobilized at the same level we were last year. And I don't know if that's possible.
I don't know either, because we're not fighting Donald Trump at the highest level.
Right. Now, a guy who talked about the polls for Congress, and they have been good the last few days. But, you know, what do you say? Plus, we're up 9 points in the generic ballot. We were up 9 points going into November 2020, too. And the polls were off. Were very off.
Yeah.
And we almost lost the House. So we need to be up by more than that. Like, we need to win by so much that the outcome is not in doubt.
No. Right. Well, hopefully, you know, there's the other elephant in the room, and hopefully that is indictments coming down for all of these crooks, and hopefully that finishes them off. That's all we got right now.
Yeah, I mean, Trump can't run for president from jail, right?
But no.
But my fear is that, you know, Republicans have constructed this alternate media universe where it doesn't matter what happens. You know, whatever the Trump org gets indicted for, whoever in the Trump organization gets indicted, you know, the Federalist is going to run out there and just tell the readers whatever they want to hear. It's a witch hunt. It's a hoax. None of it's real. And it's not going to get through to Republicans, right? The only people that it's really going to get through to are true independents who are actually not that engaged in politics, who are movable between elections. There's not that many of them, but they're out there. And that could damage Republican standing with them. And that could be important. But I kind of gave up a long time ago on scandals, you know, meaningfully hurting Trump, because he survived, you know, what would have been career ending scandal after scandal after scandal.
I know, right? Grabbing women by the pussy. That should have disqualified him from ever being
there.
What? Yeah.
It should have been it right there. That quote should kill him.
Boom. You know? Nothing else. Stormy Daniels. I mean, there's a million of them, but that alone, that was more than enough. And he just keeps going. And people believe that the biggest con man of our lifetimes, of this era, and they're saying he's the second coming. I mean, he even said it, right? I don't know. It is opposite world. That's the only thing I can say. David Ferris, so the new book, The Kids Are All Left, is already out?
Yeah, it came out in June. You know, nonfiction had a tough time of it during the pandemic. So it's kind of flew under the radar a little bit. But yeah, it's out there. You know, I'd be happy to come back and talk about it at length.
Most definitely, because I've said this before. That's my greatest thing that I can hold on to, is I see that the younger generation, I mean, I'm old now, but the kids, the 18-year-olds, the high school kids, I live right next door to Parkland. I'm in Coral Springs, Florida. So we know these kids. They're the kids that live around here. They are awesome. And I have full trust in them. I mean, just the kids who took over Mike Gravel's campaign when he entered the primary. You know, a bunch of high school kids from New York said, let us work with you. And he said, okay, because he's kind of a cool guy. And they're motivated and they're energetic and they're passionate and they're progressive. I think they are going to save the world. I don't know that I'll be around to see it, but I feel better knowing that they're going to take over soon. And I hope it, I wish it would happen now. We need to get the Democratic leadership, certainly in the House, out, because they're all in their 80s and they don't get what's going on now in the world. We need that new generation of kids, of blood, fresh blood coming in to fix things that we screwed up.
Totally agree. I also don't understand these leaders in Congress. I'm like, go play with your grandkids. Like, why are you still in the Congress when you're 85? It's crazy, right? But yeah, you're right. I mean, the younger generation, man, they make me look like Reagan. You know, I mean, they're just the left.
Patrick Leahy said he's running for re-election. I think he's like 88 years old.
I know. And they have a Republican governor.
I know.
And both senators from Vermont are ancient.
So if he dies, the Republican governor replaces him. It's insane. I'm sorry. I'm not an ageist. I'm a Bernie Sanders supporter. But we need a retirement age in the Senate, or we need term limits, or we need something, because that's a big problem in the Democratic Party, is these people won't let go of power and they checked out mentally decades ago.
Yeah, it's a microcosm of problems at large, where I think a lot of, you know, boomers and members of the silent generation are sticking around in their jobs too long too.
Yeah.
And so Leahy, I mean, Dianne Feinstein. Mess, like she's not there anymore. And she's also standing in the way of a lot of stuff.
And Nancy Pelosi needs to go home, be a grandmother and take Steny Hoyer and Jim Clyburn with you.
Yeah. Take everybody over the age of 75 and just take them home with you.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be ageist either. It's just, you know, we have younger leaders who have better and bolder ideas, and we need to get them into positions of power. And the people who are in those positions of power right now need to do the right thing. Get the younger folks trained.
Yes.
And the art of whipping votes and leading the caucus. Because if something happens to these folks, we don't have an obvious person who's experienced to take over.
I know.
That's just a huge failure of leadership right there.
Complete. And one that you can just add to the pile of the Democratic Party's problems. I don't know if you saw this, and we're running way over. I'm sorry about that. But today I see a story. Tom Perez, Barack Obama's guy to head the DNC, just joined the most anti-union law firm, big law firm in D.C. They fight unions. That's what he's doing now. I mean, really, and Joe Biden's bringing Neera Tanden in as a senior advisor. You know, that's my problem. That's what I worry about.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, I said in the fall, you know, when in the run-up to the election, it's like all this fear and effort we put in the election, and the pot at the end of that rainbow is Joe Biden. I said, okay, you know, it is what it is, but I certainly would like to see more progressive leadership ascend to the top ranks of the party. And that's just, we got to do the work of completing the takeover of the party. I think we're halfway there.
Absolutely.
But we're not there yet, you know, and I hope people don't give up. That's all I say, because the future belongs to the kids. The kids are progressive.
I believe that children are our future.
Children are the future, Nicole.
Let's sing. All right, David Ferris, thank you so much. I got to run because I'm guest hosting the broadcast tonight. So I got to change hats. And I'm so glad it's Friday and the week is over. Thank God. David Ferris, thank you so much. People can find you on Twitter at David M. F-A-R-I-S, and check out the books. I'll link to them from the blog. It's Time to Fight Dirty, Please, How Democrats Can Build a Lasting Majority in American Politics. Ah! And the new one, The Kids Are All Left. David Ferris, thank you so much. We will talk again soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. It was a blast.
My pleasure. Thank you for coming. Bye. All right. Bye. And with that, you guys, I'm done. It is a Friday, and again, I'll see you over at the broadcast tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern. 5 Pacific, find them at bradblog.com. Okay? Have a great weekend, everyone. I'll see you. I'm not going to do a show Monday, but I'll figure out what to do. If you have any requests for a best of or something, send me an email, nicole@nicolesandler.com. Otherwise, later. I'll see you Monday or Tuesday. Bye.